Welcome to Craftlit, the podcast for crafters who love books. My name is Heather Ordover, and I'm podcasting from my corner of the Sonoran Desert, the Old Pueblo, Tucson, Arizona. Episode 139, Tick-Tock. This episode of Craftlit is brought to you by Knitting Out Loud. Listen while you knit. And, even though they're not an official sponsor, the Sock Summit, because that's where I'm going. And I'm getting paid to teach with Barbara Walker and Meg Swanson. I'm so excited. So, hi. I'm so excited, and I'm so busy. I've had the most bizarre week. So many weird little things have happened. I have found that computers of both genders hate me. Both PCs and Macs have decided to blow up on me this week at various times in various ways. It reminds me, I don't know if this has happened to any of you, when I was younger and more prone to magical thinking than I am these days. Driving around Los Angeles, I started to notice during my last 2 years at UCLA that I would drive by and the streetlight would shut off as I passed it. I always ascribed this to my intense psychic abilities or something, you know, deep and meaningful. And now I think it was probably just random chance and that streetlights turn off and then turn back on as a way to save electricity on the grid. Especially in a city like Los Angeles, you really don't need every streetlight on all the time. But, you know, this kind of magical thinking where you ascribe, I don't know, motivation and personality to things. My computer, one of them is a girl, one of them is a guy, that kind of thing. I was absolutely convinced that they all had it in for me this week. I had a power surge that fried my desktop, not in any particularly dramatic way, but only in that way that took out 24 hours worth of work that I was on the clock for and that was due Thursday. So that was an interesting Thursday. I lost audio files. I lost the audio files that Marissa McGrath recorded for us for today, chapter 15, which is coming your way shortly. And so she's having to resend these files to me. I have them. They're here. They are fried. They don't play. They are, with many other files on my computer, they don't play. So, my phone, I found out that the cell phone that I live on for work and life and everything else, that I had been, I don't want to say lied to, because I really don't think these guys were lying to me. The truth was misrepresented. Or it was certainly a rose-colored tint was put on the truth. The truth was, and I don't say this to denigrate or malign any particular phone, because I really think this was a very good phone, but I had a Centro. I like the Palm operating system. I have always liked the Palm operating system. I had a handspring way back in the day before there were, you know, cameras embedded in your phones. Back in the dark ages. And I love the Palm operating system. It is intensely logical. It is able to do everything. And my husband's Crackberry drives me crazy. So yay, I had a Centro. And I was told that the Centro plays nice with the Mac, which is mostly true. But I had to buy a lot of extra software to make it play nice. And then I found out that some of the things I needed it to do, that I was promised it would be able to do, it simply couldn't. And I finally was able to find a support forum that informed me of that. And by the way, okay, support forums, are you finding the same problem that I have? That we're constantly getting spit over to support forums? Oh, just go to the support forum. There's plenty of things. You can find all the topics you need and all the answers you need. Wrong! I can spend upwards of 2 hours in a support forum and never find an answer to my problem. And this hasn't just happened to me once. This is like over the last 3 years, as this trend seems to have been happening in the support area of the software companies. I'm finding I can't get what I need. I finally actually put a ping out to all y'all on the Craftlit show notes saying, hello, WordPress, post by phone. And someone actually did find a plugin that I think is going to work. Thank you very much, by the way, Bibliotecaria. There's no way that I can see your real name, so I'm just going with that. You found a plugin. I searched iPhone, and you found a plugin that I didn't find. So God bless you. And thank you so much. I'm hoping it will work. I'm loading it up tonight after I finish the podcast, because I have been trying to record this podcast for 3 days now. It's driving me nuts. Part of it is trying to find time where it's quiet and I can do things like record audio without you having to listen to my children, which I'm sure you'd love, but I'm not going to do. And part of it was just the tech stuff for about 2 days. I couldn't hear the audio. I could see that I was, you know, recording. I could see the bars go green, yellow, red. I knew stuff was going in. I couldn't get anything out on any computer. So I stopped recording because that just didn't seem safe somehow, you know? So what did I do when I hit this horrible, frustrating block of I can't podcast, I can't do work, I can't do anything? I went to the craft room. I'm having a wonderful time playing with mixed media stuff right now. You know from previous episodes, if you've been listening for a while, that there was that mixed media portrait book. There's also Mixed Mania. The two women responsible for Mixed Mania, and I will put a link to their book again, because if you haven't taken a look at it at your local bookstore, you really should. Local independently owned bookstore. Just putting a shout out there for the poor people who are struggling. The Mixed Mania book has some really good ideas. And I've told you before that I'm very much a recipe person the first time I try something, and then I kind of branch out and get wacky. And I showed you some of my very much following the recipe, you know, copying stuff out of the magazine work. Well, now I'm starting to get a little more comfortable and I'm starting to branch out. And one of the things that I've created to take to the Sock Summit is a book. I made a book, and it's a book that has different width of pages. So it's kind of like in a pop-up book, you know, you can kind of see the next page coming. It's that sort of thing. So it's there's a grade. The first page is, you know, I don't know, 6-7 inches wide. The next one is 10 inches wide, and so on. So you can kind of see a color coming or a texture coming. And so I have one page for every book that we've completed so far. I don't have a Scarlet Letter page because that'll be the beginning of the next book. But I'm very excited. I've done a lot of very odd things that are kind of not at all like me, and I'm really excited about that. It's been fun. I've layered things, and I've pasted things, and I've sanded things, and I've painted things, and I'm not going to have it done when I get to Sock Summit, because I can tell it's one of those things that you just kind of keep adding to. Although the Pride and Prejudice page is kind of pristine, and I think I like it that way. But like the Tristan and Isolde page, I just know I'm going to do more to that. I haven't decided what yet. And I don't think I'm going to be able to figure that out until after the Sock Summit. There's too much going on. So, mixed media, having a ball. Boys and I are having a ball. Boys, my older son, who, you know, you have lived with me, if you have been listening for all 139 episodes, you have lived with me through a lot of drama with Thing One. And by the way, on that topic, Thing One just finished the second Harry Potter book and started the third. My husband and I were convinced. We were like, well, we'll let him read the first one when he's 9, and then we'll let him read the second one when he's 10. But there's something about when you have a child who was a slow-to-get-started reader. Not that he's a slow reader, but that it was a struggle to learn to read. When a fire gets lit under him like this, and it's happened with a couple different books. He loved the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books. Those were really his first books that he ever read, and that was very exciting. And he likes Franny K. Stein books, of course, because he's a mad scientist. But there was something about the Harry Potter book that, like for so many children, just really lit a fire under him. And as soon as he was done with the first book, he was talking about it all the time. He was so excited. He was really jazzed. And he said, I'm only going to ask once, but do you think it would be okay for me to read the second book? And we said, well, it gets a little scarier. So you can be the judge. You know, if you feel comfortable, then yes, by all means, it's yours. And if you don't feel comfortable, then stop. And he read the second book in 3 days and is now on to the third book. And we've told him, you know, if the minute you get scared, you just stop. And he hasn't yet. And I'm really kind of proud of him. It's very exciting. So for all of you who have lived through this in real time with me, I hope you have experienced the same kind of success for your child. And if you are coming up and finding that your son is having a difficult time reading, please don't hesitate to email me, because I've lived through it all. And we came out the other side. And that's very exciting. So that's good. And I have exciting news, because we have not one but two, count them, two fabulous promos from Craftlit listeners. You guys are getting out there and getting your own microphones. All right, here comes the first one.
Whole Lotta Singer, podcast about vintage sewing machines, the history of quilts, and the amazing women that made them. Join me at wholelottasinger.wordpress.com. That's wholelottasinger.wordpress.com.
So I'm kind of fascinated by that one. I'm definitely tuning in. I'm mostly just because I'm digging the background music. I'm in that kind of mood because I'm freaking out about getting ready for the Sock Summit, and I feel the need to get in touch with something more spiritual and calming, other than a glass of wine. So yeah, I kind of dug the music. I'm gonna go check it out. Here is our next promo.
Hello, my name is Allison Williams, the host of Family Knits, a new podcast for knitters about family. In Series 1, I'll be talking about the very beginning of families, mate selection, who we find attractive and why. Also, I'll be telling you about my knitting and sharing a pattern each week that's inspired by our topic. You can subscribe to Family Knits on iTunes.
Allison and I have been having some interesting conversations back and forth on email. I think you Craftlit people, you are going to find her podcast rather enlightening. I think you should tune in. They're both going to be interesting. So, you know, take a listen, see how it goes. And hey, congratulations. A little applause. Round of applause. I have stereo mic. I don't know if you can tell that I was going around and around the microphone. A round of applause to the both of you for actually, you know, getting the cojones together to go out there and grab a mic and do a podcast. I'm excited for you. It's great. Again, going with the Zen moment. All right, enough with the Zen. Let's get back to it. For those of you who are able to hear background noise, perhaps more than other people are, I apologize for the fans. It is hotter than blazes in this room. Computers running, and for some reason, the ducts in this room don't duct well, so we don't really get a whole lot of air in here, which is kind of bad for a room with computers in it. It's hot, and I do have fans running, so I apologize for that. I know it's really annoying to hear that kind of interference in the background, but there it is. I'm looking at my notes real quick. Arizona is not getting our summer rains. I think they have all flown to the Northeast. I'm really sorry about that. Especially those of you in Canada seem to be getting dumped upon. I'm really sorry. I really wish I could take our rains back. We haven't gotten rain in over a week, and it's killing us. Because even if you don't get rain during the monsoon season, you at least get cloud cover. By the afternoon, the hottest part of the afternoon, you can be guaranteed that you will at least get some shade. And 110 in shade is really not that bad. 100 and nothing in the sun is really hot. So I don't know what's going on with it's climate change, but it's a bummer. So I'm trying not to drive so much. Can you tell it's working? it's making everything better. Woohoo! I am going to be teaching again this fall, just to give you an update. That means that for the months of, well, the last part of August and the month of September, when my two jobs overlap again, while that is wonderful for my paycheck, that is really bad for podcasting. I am going to do my darndest to be prepared for the school year before the school year starts this time. They mercifully told us that we were going to be teaching and what classes we would be teaching considerably in advance of last year. Last year, we found out August 1st and we started teaching August 20th. This year, I was lucky enough to find out a couple of weeks ago, and this may be because they simply are not bringing adjuncts back. The university is going through horrendous budget cuts, and I am very, very lucky and know it. So I apologize if it takes me away from the podcast, but I'm glad that I'm at least going to be there to help the kids through what is destined to be a rough year. It's going to be hard. And that's sad, you know, because you don't want college to be rough, but this year's going to be hard. In a very brave move on my part, and braver still because I'm telling you and sometimes he listens, I have given my novel to my father. My husband is a good editor and a tough editor, but I wouldn't really consider him a critic. My dad, probably because he is my dad, is my toughest critic. He's the scariest of all the people who are going to read it. Well, him and maybe my Aunt Cheryl, his sister, are, they're tough critics because they are really smart and they know good writing when they see it and they produce good writing themselves. And that is scary because the other gift that they both have is honesty. I've gotten two of the best comments that I've ever gotten from my dad. He's a third of the way through. He said he really likes it a lot. He's gonna finish it. He's reading it faster than anybody else is right now. And he said, the first 30 pages, you use vaguely way too often. There's like one page where you use it three times. I went, oh, that is awesome feedback, because now I know what to go back and look for. And that's the kind of weird detailish stuff that you miss when you're writing and then you get pulled away and then you're writing and then you get pulled away and then days go by and then you go back and you can write. It's very strange. And speaking of that, if you look at the new Studio magazine, this is put out by Interweave. It's the people who do cloth, paper, scissors. They have a studio magazine that shows you how normal mortals like us wind up having studio space or finding a way to dedicate some studio space that's workable, that's usable, and that they have made attractive and great. There was a very interesting article by a woman who got a fellowship to an actual studio, you know, like a big warehouse room with studio space, you know, supplied with everything she needed and big tables and big cupboards, and it's a dream, right? After 6 months, she said it was the biggest mistake she'd ever made. That it was being in the home, working out of the home, where the phone can ring, or the kids can come in and bug you, or your husband can come and say, what is that? Or, you know, whatever. That those interruptions and the things that pull you away from what you're doing, those interruptions are what let you come back to what you're doing with fresh eyes. And not only just fresh eyes, but also fresh imagination and creative spark, that maybe you've been pulled away for so long that you've been percolating and now you have new ideas and a better way to do things. And I was so relieved to read this, because I'd started to think that I was nuts, that for the first time in my life, I'm in a routine that is largely not a routine. I am constantly getting pulled in six different directions at the same time. You know, once I drop off the kids, it's anyone's guess if I'm going to have a day where I can sit at the computer and write steady for 6 hours and do my work, or if I'm going to be writing on paper in between all the other things I have to do and then typing stuff in at night, or what. And she's right. I do work better when I have these weird, bizarre breaks. I work better at my writing, my educational writing job, and I work better in my creative work. And I'm really excited. So I hope that gives some hope to you who, like me, find yourself pulled in six different directions. And fighting to find that creative time, that there's a very good chance that even if you had unlimited, unbroken time, you wouldn't be any more productive in your creative life than you are being pulled in six different directions at once. It's just, it's my little positive moment in the midst of the computer disasters. So I'm very excited. I am getting ready for the Sock Summit. I have my PowerPoints are done, but I keep, you know, having dreams and saying, oh, I need to add this slider. Oh, I need to have this slider. You know, I should take all of my extra sock yarn in case people forget theirs or whatever. So God only knows how many bags I am going to wind up trying to pack to take with me. But I am getting ready, heading out. Amy from Knitty.com and I will be rooming together. Once again, there will be a big craftlet announcement at Sock Summit. To find out details of that, please visit Jenny the Potter or Yellow Dog from the Twin, both from the Twin Cities, I think. Either of those two booths will have craftlet brochures. Jenny the Potter's stall will also have craftlet CDs of all the previous books. Those will be available for you to hand to people who you want to give a new addiction to. Oh, yeah, we were cracking ourselves up with that. That is where the title of this episode comes from, too. TikTok. The clock is ticking, and I have plenty to do. However, the other thing that I forgot will be at Jenny's stall is a few, not a lot, a few, of the Madame Defarge Knits, What Would Madame Defarge Knit t-shirts. This is clearly becoming a thing. And there will be more and more kind of variations on that theme available on the swag section of the Craftlet homepage, which is craftlet.com. If any of you continue to have difficulties or weirdnesses with RSS feeds or iTunes issues, please do email me. I am responding as fast as I can, and I'm trying to problem solve as much as I can. Of course, during Sock Summit, that time is going to be kind of limited, but I still want to get on it and basically stop having these problems. So the more feedback you give me, the faster I can get on it and the faster we can get past all of the craziness and the changeover from the websites. And I thank you for your infinite patience. The library. I'm in the middle of updating the library of our episodes. Here is what you will find. You will find at the top, and I'll probably be doing this at night during the Sock Summit, so don't expect this for a couple of weeks, but at the top of the library, you will see a list of our books so far, and next to those titles, it will tell you which number episodes fall into those categories. And just like on the CDs, I'm going to bundle the short stories and Tristan and Isolde together. So those will be kind of all under one roof, one title roof, because it's really hard to track everything else otherwise. So you'll have links, little anchor links that will take you down to those MP3 files. One of our listeners, Amanda, who is a goddess, is going through and helping me pull together all of the show note links so that I will one day be able to not only have a link to the MP3 file, but a link to the show notes, which I think will make the library much more user-friendly for you, especially those of you who are coming in late and are starting to get interested in thinking about listening to some of the old books. I think this will make it easier for and hopefully, in making it easier, it will also make it a faster process for you to find the files that you're looking for and be able to listen to the books you want to listen to. I think the iTunes drama is over. I say that crossing my fingers and toes and legs and everything. I probably look like I need to go to the bathroom. But I'm hoping that all that drama is over. Still having weird RSS feed problems with my Mama O Knit site, but I have a code monkey on that right now. One of my former students is helping me out, and we're hoping that that all works very well. And I think that's it. Oh, there was one little tidbit that I had wanted to tell you about, and just, you know, passing on information. It's like, you know, telling you about the Insta-Dry Sally Hansen's Fast Dry Nail Color. This is a little different. I think I mentioned a while ago, a year and a half ago, that my hands had started shaking and this was starting to interfere with things like knitting. And then we found some medication that stopped the shaking mostly. Well, it turns out that these things are called essential tremors and that people of a certain age, a certain 40-ish age, sometimes have these tremors start. Here's something to know if you have these tremors. Evidently, alcohol often, but not always, stops the tremors. If you find that your hands were shaking and now you're drinking more, you are self-medicating, and people have created an alcoholic tendency in themselves as a way to self-medicate to stop the shakes, which is interesting, of course, because regular alcoholics often get DTs and get the shakes coming off of alcohol. We of the essential tremor folks would have the shakes come on not because of the DTs, but because alcohol stops them. Creepy, huh? So, Gino, just something to know as we age gracefully together, looking better and better every year. Gosh darn it, because that's just the way craft-lit people are. So, you know, just something to know, she says as she looks at her wine glass. Yeah. Well, like any, you know, everything in moderation, right? At least my hands won't shake when I knit tonight. And I know why. And I know that it doesn't take more than half a glass of wine for them to stop shaking. So it's weird. Isn't the human body an amazing and strange and wonderful, miraculous thing? I mean, there's the whole miracle of birth thing, like getting pregnant and feeling the baby grow, and that's miraculous. I'm sorry, there's no other word for it. It's a miracle. It's a miracle it works. It's a miracle that they come out okay. It's, I mean, the neurosystem alone is a miracle. But there's just so many things about the human body, the human mind. I'm ecstatic. And I'm ecstatic because we are starting to get into some of, I think, the more psychologically interesting chapters in The Scarlet Letter. Wasn't that an awesome segue? Oh, wow. I love it when that happens. So today is chapter 15. Chapter 15 is called Hester and Pearl. Now, as you recall, we've just left poor Hester and nasty Mr. Chillingworth, or Mr. Prynne, Roger Chillingworth. We've left them separating, that he's revealed absolutely how absolutely and purely evil he has become. Hester has been very honest with him. He has been very honest with her, and she has made it clear that she will be telling Dimmesdale who Chillingworth really is and what the deal is. So the jig is up, right? So we have Pearl playing off by herself on the beach, and we have Hester reeling, rebounding, recovering from Chillingworth. Well, today I think is interesting because you start to see, I feel, Hester becoming a complete and total person now. Not that she wasn't before, but that it hadn't been revealed to us, really. I mean, we have pieces of her. We understand kind of her thinking in the beginning when she is first branded with this scarlet letter. And we understand after a few years how she's come to have a place within their society. And we also come to understand how this punishment has not taught her the lesson that the townspeople thought it should have taught her. They don't know that, but we do. So we've already seen kind of these psychological pieces of Hester falling into place. Well, now there's some really, I think, fascinating stuff. Hester says some things, and I know this isn't the first time that I've made this comparison between The Scarlet Letter and Huck Finn. And maybe You know, it never occurred to me before. Maybe it's because they were written at mostly the same time. It's very easy to forget that Hawthorne was writing this in the mid-1800s. Not in 1640. So, you know, mid-1800s, slavery's still going, abolition is a real conversation, suffrage is getting more and more play. Hawthorne is also famous for having made the scribbling women comment about women causing trouble. But clearly, on some level, he had great empathy and understanding for the plight of women at this time. So you have, you know, Hawthorne and Twain, they weren't writing at exactly the same time, but they overlap somewhat. And I've told you before, there's that scene in Huck Finn where he decides that he would rather go to hell and free Jim, and he means it quite sincerely and realistically, than go to heaven and have Jim be in bondage. Hester says something that I think is tantamount to the same thing in this chapter. It's not quite as dramatic, but it's very easy to gloss over. And I'll make sure at the end of the chapter that I reinforce what she says. You can go ahead and listen for it. I think you'll be able to pick up on it. But she also has this wonderful opportunity to dissect her marriage from before. And I think I often joke that women have one, if we're lucky, only one really, really bad boyfriend. And from spending time with my husband, I'm willing to put out there that men have one really, really insane girlfriend. And we all have at least one. Everybody has a story. Because, of course, Hester couldn't date during her life the way that we do now. Or that we did when I was in school. I think it's a little different now. She, as an adult woman now, I think she kind of looks back on her relationship with Chillingworth, pre-Chillingworth, when he was Mr. Prynne, the same way that we tend to talk about that one horrible, evil boyfriend, the controlling one, the manipulative one, the one who didn't really let you have your own identity, or the one who talked you away from having your own identity, or the one who only appreciated the things that he put in you in the first place. You know, this kind of Svengali thing. And I'm not just talking from personal experience here. That's something I've heard from more than one person, and the Svengali comment actually comes from a friend. I think you'll hear those same kinds of things coming out of Hester, and it is, of course, shocking and very, very sad that Hester experiences those things not in a bad boyfriend, but in her husband. And I think there's this wonderful dichotomy that's set up, that the accepted relationship, the one that was sanctioned by the church, which is even more horrifying in some ways, is her marriage to Chillingworth, which is a sham and not built on love or mutual admiration or complementary strengths or anything, and her relationship with Dimmesdale, which we really don't know very much about. But we can at least assume, without causing too much trouble, I think, that there was at least some passion and some love and some genuine kind of complementary aspects to their character. These two people, neither of them, call me on it if you think I'm wrong, but neither of these two people to me seem like the kind of people who would have gotten the hots for each other because of one of them being really good looking. I don't get that this was a shallow relationship. I don't for a second think that Dimmesdale would have been swayed merely by Hester being attractive. And Hester's turned into such an interesting, strong, and deep woman. I can't imagine her risking everything that she risked just because some guy was cute. On some level, I really believe that this was, as much as I joke about Dimmesdale being a wuss and a deer in the headlights and all that kind of stuff that I tease about, I respect Hester enough to expect that Dimmesdale pre-judgment, pre-Hester on the scaffold, was a different man, and was an even more different man in private. And I promise you, we will get to a chapter where this is all revealed to you very soon. But today is a conversation between Hester and Pearl, and there are moments that will make you gasp. Pearl does and says things that will just, woof, it's awesome. It's a great chapter. And you know, we're heading towards the end, and the pieces have to build, and we're going to build a lot today. So, without any further yammering in your ear, here is Chapter 15, Hester and Pearl.
Chapter 15, Hester and Pearl. Sir Roger Chillingworth, a deformed old figure with a face that haunted men's memories longer than they liked, took leave of Hester Prynne and went stooping away along the earth. He gathered here and there an herb, or grubbed up a root, and put it into the basket on his arm. His gray beard almost touched the ground as he crept onward. Hester gazed after him a little while, looking with a half-fantastic curiosity to see whether the tender grass of early spring would not be blighted beneath him and show the wavering track of his footsteps, sere and brown, across its cheerful verdure. She wondered what sort of herbs they were which the old man was so sedulous to gather. Would not the earth quicken to an evil purpose by the sympathy of his eye? Greet him with poisonous shrubs of species hitherto unknown, that would start up under his fingers? Or might it suffice him that every wholesome growth should be converted into something deleterious and malignant at its touch? Did the sun, which shone so brightly everywhere else, really fall upon him? Or was there, as it rather seemed, a circle of ominous shadow moving along with his deformity, whichever way he turned himself? And whither was he now going? Would he not suddenly sink into the earth, leaving a barren and blasted spot, where, in due course of time, would be seen deadly nightshade, dogwood, henbane, or whatever else of vegetable wickedness the climate could produce, all flourishing with hideous luxuriance? Or would he spread bat's wings and flee away, looking so much the uglier the higher he rose towards heaven? "Be it sin or no," said Hester Prynne bitterly as she gazed after him, "I hate the man." She abraded herself for the sentiment, but could not overcome or lessen it. Attempting to do so, she thought of those long past days in a distant land when he used to emerge at eventide from the seclusion of his study and sit down in the firelight of their home, and in the light of her nuptial smile. He needed to bask himself in that smile, he said, in order that the chill of so many lonely hours among his books might be taken off the scholar's heart. Such scenes had once appeared not otherwise than happy, but now, as viewed through the dismal medium of her subsequent life, they classed themselves among her ugliest remembrances. She marveled at how such scenes could have been. She marveled how she could ever have been wrought upon to marry him. She deemed it her crime most to be repented of, that she had ever endured and reciprocated the lukewarm grasp of his hand, and had suffered the smile of her lips and eyes to mingle and melt into his own. And it seemed a fouler offense committed by Roger Chillingworth than any which had since been done him, that in the time when her heart knew no better, he had persuaded her to fancy herself happy by his side. "Yes, I hate him," repeated Hester more bitterly than before. "He betrayed me. He has done me worse wrong than I did him." Let men tremble to win the hand of woman, unless they win along with it the utmost passion of her heart. Else it may be their miserable fortune, as it was Roger Chillingworth's, when some mightier touch than their own may have awakened all her sensibilities, to be reproached even for the calm content, the marble image of happiness, which they will have imposed upon her as the warm reality. But Hester ought long ago to have done with this injustice. What did it betoken? Had 7 long years under the torture of the Scarlet Letter inflicted so much of misery and wrought out no repentance? The emotion of that brief space, while she stood gazing after the crooked figure of old Roger Chillingworth, threw a dark light on Hester's state of mind, revealing much that she had might not otherwise have acknowledged to herself. He being gone, she summoned back her child. "Pearl, little Pearl, where are you?" Pearl, whose activity of spirit never flagged, had been at no loss for amusement while her mother talked with the old gatherer of herbs. At first, as already told, she had flirted fancifully with her own image in a pool of water, beckoning the phantom forth, and, as it declined to venture, seeking a passage for herself into its sphere of impalpable earth and unattainable sky. Soon finding, however, that either she or the image was unreal, she turned elsewhere for better pastime. She made little boats of birch bark and freighted them with snail shells, and sent out more ventures on the mighty deep than any merchant in New England. But the larger part of them foundered near the shore. She seized a live horseshoe by the tail and made prize of several five fingers, and laid out a jellyfish to melt in the warm sun. Then she took up the white foam that streaked the line of the advancing tide and threw it upon the breeze, scampering after it with winged footsteps to catch the great snowflakes ere they fell. Perceiving a flock of beach birds that fed and fluttered along the shore, the naughty child picked up her apron full of pebbles and, creeping from rock to rock after these small sea fowl, displayed remarkable dexterity in pelting them. One little gray bird with a white breast, Pearl was almost sure had been hit by a pebble, and fluttered away with a broken wing. But then the elf child sighed and gave up her sport, because it grieved her to have done harm to a little being that was as wild as the sea breeze, or as wild as Pearl herself. Her final employment was to gather seaweed of various kinds and make herself a scarf or mantle and a headdress, and thus assume the aspect of a little mermaid. She inherited her mother's gift for devising drapery and costume. As the last touch to her mermaid's garb, Pearl took some eelgrass and imitated as best she could on her own bosom the decoration with which she was so familiar on her mother's. A letter, the letter A, but freshly green instead of scarlet. The child bent her chin upon her breast and contemplated this device with strange interest, even as if the one only thing for which she had been sent into the world was to make out its hidden import. "I wonder if Mother will ask me what it means," thought Pearl. Just then she heard her mother's voice, and flitting along as lightly as one of the little sea birds, appeared before Hester Prynne, dancing, laughing, and pointing her finger to the ornament upon her bosom. "My little Pearl," said Hester after a moment's silence, "the green letter, and on thy childish bosom, has no purport. But dost thou know, my child, what this letter means, which thy mother is doomed to wear?" "Yes, mother," said the child, "it is the great letter A. Thou hast taught it to me in the hornbook." Hester looked steadily into her little face, but though there was that singular expression which she had so often remarked in her black eyes, she could not satisfy herself whether Pearl really attached any meaning to the symbol. She felt a morbid desire to ascertain the point. "Dost thou know, child, wherefore thy mother wears this letter?" "Truly do I," answered Pearl, looking brightly into her mother's face. "It is for the same reason that the minister keeps his hand over his heart." "And what reason is that?" asked Hester, half smiling at the absurd incongruity of the child's observation, but on second thoughts, turning pale. "What has the letter to do with any heart save mine?" "Nay, mother, I have told all I know," said Pearl, more seriously than she was wont to speak. "Ask yonder old man whom thou hast been talking with. It may be as he can tell, but in good earnest now, mother dear, what does the scarlet letter mean, and why dost thou wear it on thy bosom, and why does the minister keep his hand over his heart?" She took her mother's hand in both her own and gazed into her eyes with an earnestness that was seldom seen in her wild and capricious character. The thought occurred to Hester that the child might really be seeking to approach her with childlike confidence, and doing what she could, and as intelligently as she knew how, to establish a meeting point of sympathy. It showed Pearl in an unwonted aspect. Heretofore the mother, while loving her child with the intensity of a soul affection, had schooled herself to hope for little other return than the waywardness of an April breeze, which spends its time in airy sport, and has its gusts of inexplicable passion, and is petulant in the best of moods, and chills oftener than caresses you, when you take it to your bosom, in requital of which misdemeanors it will sometimes, of its own vague purpose, kiss your cheek with a kind of doubtful tenderness, and play gently with your hair, and then be gone about its other idle business, leaving a dreamy pleasure at your heart. And this, moreover, was a mother's estimate of the child's disposition. Any other observer might have seen few but unamiable traits, and have given them a far darker coloring. But now the idea came strongly into Hester's mind, that Pearl, with her remarkable precocity and acuteness, might already have approached the age when she could have been made a friend, and entrusted with as much of her mother's sorrows as could be imparted, without a reverence either to the parent or the child. In the little chaos of Pearl's character, there might be seen emerging, and could have been from the very first, the steadfast principles of an unflinching courage, an uncontrollable will, a sturdy pride, which might be disciplined into self-respect, and a bitter scorn of many things which, when examined, might be found to have the taint of falsehood in them. She possessed affections, too, though hitherto acrid and disagreeable, as are the richest flavors of unripe fruit. With all these sterling attributes, thought Hester, the evil which she inherited from her mother must be great indeed if a noble woman do not grow out of the selfish child. Pearl's inevitable tendency to hover about the enigma of the scarlet letter seemed an innate quality of her being, From the earliest epoch of her conscious life, she had entered upon this as her appointed mission. Hester had often fancied that Providence had a design of justice and retribution in endowing the child with this marked propensity. But never, until now, had she bethought herself to ask whether, linked with that design, there might not likewise be a purpose of mercy and beneficence. If little Pearl were entertained with faith and trust, as a spirit messenger no less than an earthly child, might it not be her errand to soothe away the sorrow that lay cold in her mother's heart, and converted it into a tomb, and to help her to overcome the passion once so wild and even yet neither dead nor asleep, but only imprisoned within the same tomb-like heart? Such were some of the thoughts that now stirred in Hester's mind with as much vivacity of impression as if they had actually been whispered into her ear. And there was little Pearl, all this while, holding her mother's hand in both her own and turning her face upward while she put these searching questions once and again and still a third time. "What does the letter mean, mother? And why dost thou wear it? And why does the minister keep his hand over his heart?" "What shall I say?" thought Hester to herself. "No, if this be the price of the child's sympathy, I cannot pay it." Then she spoke aloud. "Silly Pearl," said she, "what questions are these? There are many things in this world a child must not ask about. What know I of the minister's heart? And as for the scarlet letter, I wear it for the sake of its gold thread." In all the 7 bygone years, Hester Prynne had never before been false to the symbol on her bosom. It may be that it was the talisman of a stern and severe, but yet a guardian spirit, who now forsook her, as recognizing that, in spite of the strict watch over her heart, some new evil had crept into it, or some old one had never been expelled. As for little Pearl, the earnestness soon passed out of her face. But the child did not see fit to let the matter drop. 2 or 3 times as her mother and she went homeward, and as often at supper time, and while Hester was putting her to bed, and once after she seemed to be fairly asleep, Pearl looked up, with mischief gleaming in her black eyes. "Mother," she said, "what does the scarlet letter mean?" And the next morning, the first indication the child gave of being awake was by popping up her head from the pillow and making that other inquiry which she had so unaccountably connected with her investigations about the scarlet letter. "Mother, mother, why does the minister keep his hand over his heart?" "Hold thy tongue, naughty child," answered her mother, with an asperity she had never permitted to herself before. "Do not tease me, else I shall put thee in the dark closet."
End of chapter 15. Read by Marissa McGrath in Vancouver, British Columbia.
"Be it sin or no, I hate the man." Just think about it for a minute. That even if it is a sin, even if it is something that will drive a wedge between her and God, she will admit out loud that she hates Chillingworth. And you know, this is, do you remember that book Forever by Judy Blume? There's a very interesting scene that I have remembered my entire adult life because I don't even remember when I read the book. Anyway, there's a scene where the younger sister swears, she says a particularly bad word, and the older sister says, and the younger sister says, "What? That's not a bad word. Hate and war are bad words." And I always remembered that because we don't usually talk about things that way. But hating is, you know, probably not such a good thing. And war is, I suppose you could call it a necessary evil. I mean, I'm certainly, you know, my cousins spent 2 tours overseas in Iraq, and he's wonderful, and I'm just glad he came home. But hate. She's willing to say that she hates Chillingworth. I think that's huge, especially back then. I mean, even in the 1800s back then. Wow. And then her, you know, her description of her marriage and, it's just passionless and loveless and, woof. This poor woman. And then Pearl and her sea green A. And then the words that I think always struck absolute horror into my heart, was Hester's comment that, Pearl's comment that she is not wearing an A yet. I also always cracked up that Hester threatens to lock her in a closet. I'm always impressed that she hasn't tried to do it before. Pearl just seems like a horrible handful most of the time, and poor Hester's there alone and by herself with this imp. And I don't know. I've always found that to be, horrifying on the one hand, because this young child probably thinks that this is what's really going to happen to her, and I'm sure that children have had much worse punishments inflicted upon them than a dark closet. But a dark closet's pretty scary when you're that young. You don't have to try hard to get scarier than that. So, poor Hester. And Pearl. And Pearl, insightful little Pearl, who will continue to be insightful little Pearl as we continue through the book. I hope you have a great week. I will talk to you again after Sock Summit. So that'll be the 14th, and take care of yourself. Huge thank yous to Marissa McGrath, who not only read the chapter, she read the chapter twice, and she had to send it to me three times because, well, once I just lost it, and then another time my computer fried it. So she is, her spot in heaven is assured. Huge thanks. And many, many thanks again to Nancy and Amanda, who have been helping me, and Amy in New Zealand, who both she and her husband have been helping me with all this crazy code stuff and all the stuff you don't care about, because really, you're just here to listen to the book. And and then you have to listen to me too. I'm so sorry. I hope you have a great week. I will be mostly losing my mind at Sock Summit, and when I come back, I will have brilliant news for you. You can get a jump start on that news if you go to craftlit.com and look in the upper right-hand corner of the show notes. You'll notice there's a new button there. Click on that link, and you'll get a little hint of what's coming up in the Craftlit universe. Ever expanding and growing. Which is a little like my hips, but they're getting better. I had to go buy some clothes today for Sock Summit, and I was very happy because I was the same size that I thought I was, which, for a while there, post-baby, and you're aging, and your body is not doing what you want it to be doing, that isn't always the case anymore. I used to be a size 8. I was 5'8", and a size 8. And I was that way for a really long time. I'm not a size 8 anymore. I am, however, still 5'8". I haven't started shrinking yet, so I'm very excited about that. And I might. See, my husband is exactly the same size as me, or exactly the same height as me. So while I'm at Sock Summit, I might actually break out some heels. Just cause I can. I try not to wear heels around him, which is not his thing. It is my thing. But you know how it is. I'm not Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise. I can't be a goddess like Nicole Kidman, because I'm not a goddess like Nicole Kidman. And on that note, I hope you have a great week. I hope you go off and embrace your inner goddess and wear heels if you want to. For me, actually, they make my feet feel better. I don't wear heels very often, and the heels that I do have are actually pretty good and have arch support to them, and somehow my lower back and feet feel better after I wear not super high heels. I won't do that, but anyway, enough about my feet. Let's talk about your feet at the Sock Summit. Another segue. I'm so excited. All right, have a great week. I am clearly goofy, mostly because I need to go eat something, so I'm gonna do that. You get on with your day, go work with your hands, be productive, and have a wonderful time. And I'll talk to you when I get back from the summit. Take care. Bye. Please remember to support the people who support Craftlit. Visit Knitting Out Loud. Listen while you knit. and please visit the blogs and sites of Craftlit supporters. Those links can be found in the sidebar of the show notes. The show notes can be found at craftlit.com, or you can subscribe at iTunes. Craftlit is made possible by the generous support of its listeners, and for that, I am truly grateful. And remember, if your hands are too busy to pick up a book, at least you can turn one.